Over the holidays, I got Drop Mix, the board game from the creators of Rock Band. Plus, the Vive Pro was announced at CES. Is it worth the hype? Tonight is January 14th, 2018, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwell.
I hope the RNG was in your favor this week. Show started on time tonight, so I'm doing good so far. Now let's see if the RNG network connection will stay up. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a hopefully not random edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com for this episode 599... I only know this because of the episode counter. You can check in, and it'll actually tell you it's episode 599. So this is not a special show at all, and honestly, neither will next week. It's just going to be another show. But episode 599, if you want to check in, if you're logged into the site over at live.vognetwork.com, that's where I'm going to be reading intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. You can check in just like SJ100 Matt and DJ Ron Maes. They checked in at some point during the intro of the show. Or you can listen for a passphrase somewhere during the episode. It'll rudely interrupt, and you can put that up on the site as well. Maybe I'll have like special loot for episode 600. I don't know. And that would be for either checking in live or on the podcast. I don't know. We'll think about it. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll free number for you to call in. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show. This is all one word, or toll free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can comment on the episode over at VogNetwork.com. Everybody's talking about Awesome Games Done Quick, which just wrapped up, I think, what was $2.2 million, a little over they raised for the Prevent Cancer Foundation. So if you missed any of those speed runs, they are going to slowly upload them to YouTube, but they're also available as Twitch clips. So they're all available on Twitch. You may just have to scrub because they've got, like, 6-hour clip, so if you want like the 1 30-minute run, you've got to figure out when it starts and start it at the right time. But eventually they'll get all clipped individually and put up on their YouTube page. But congrats to all the runners there and all that stuff. There was a lot of good stuff going on. And it's kind of interesting that the Awesome Games Done Quick, or just the Games Done Quick thing, because there's also Summer Games Done Quick. It's a really interesting phenomenon for me because it's the time of year that I realize, oh, yeah, there's a whole community that does this, and this is all they do is speedrunning. So it's not just 2 weeks out of the year, the 1 week in January and the 1 week in June or July, whenever Summer Games Done Quick is. It's a whole full-on community. But I don't care. And this is just me personally. I don't care because I've tried to watch. Every once in a while, like one time I remember watching, I'm like, oh, you know, I feel like, you know, hey, somebody's playing Zelda Ocarina of Time. And it was a speedrunner. Apparently, like, one of the top speedrunners or something. And what they were doing is they were streaming on Twitch practicing their speedrun, which is keyword practice. So they would mess up 6 minutes in, reset, start the run over. I saw the first 5 minutes of that run about 4 times, and I got bored. And the reason I like Games Done Quick is because they don't do that. They have to account for their mistakes and do the whole run. Whereas if you watch a lot of speedrunners on Twitch, they will abandon a run. The minute something goes wrong, they abandon it. And that's not fun for me to watch as a viewer. If I was a part of a community that was trying to speedrun a game, probably it would, because then I'd learn from the mistakes and try to make myself better. But this is kind of like their superb owl of speedrunning. And that's why I enjoy it so much. So I know that there are speedrunners that do this stuff every single night, all the time. A lot of these speedrunners that you see on Games Done Quick, you can go to their Twitch channel and pretty much, you know, any night of the week, one of those runners is going to be running a game that they probably did on Games Done Quick. But it's all building up to that 1 week in that hotel, either in Virginia or Minnesota, whichever one they're in. And that's why it appeals to me and why you're not going to, you know, I don't sit there and watch speedrunners on Twitch the other 50 weeks of the year because I don't want to watch practices. I like watching the live event. And it's kind of like, you know, that's why, like, a lot of people, they don't care about football. But they will watch the Superb Owl in a few weeks. And it's the only game, football game, all year they will watch. And it's because everything leads up to it. And so that's why I like games done quick. I do have a critique of some of what happens at Games Done Quick. And I was actually alerted to this because somebody tweeted about it. So it's the Outrage Machine on Twitter. But they'll always do like the awful Games Done Quick block, which I enjoy. But they'll also do other games that are just broken and glitched. And the problem that is propping up is that a lot of these speedrunners have never made a game themselves. So they will go on Games Done Quick, big charity marathon, huge viewership, and sit there and talk about how, oh, the developers are lazy. The developers are dumb. They don't know what they're doing. And here's how stupid they are. Look at this. Ha, ha, ha. And I think that's the wrong tone to take. Because even the bad games, the people making them, for the most part, do care about their work. They just don't have the time to do it right. Or the money's not there to pay the people to do it right. Because that takes time. You can have... I work in the consulting business. Non-gaming, but it is software consulting. And I'm trying to remember what the three are in my head. That's why I'm vamping a little bit. But you could either have something fast, cheap, or good. You can only pick two of the three. You can have it fast and cheap, or fast and good. Fast and cheap is something that's bad. Fast and good is something that's expensive. And cheap and good is something that's going to take a long time. You can only pick two of those three. You cannot have something fast, cheap, and good. And a lot of times in software development, not just games, you run into that. What do you sacrifice? So I don't like the idea of attacking developers and saying, oh, the devs suck, especially from people that they don't write. They don't make games. What they do is they speed run them and stuff, and which is great entertainment. But I think we can do without the developer shaming. And that usually happens on the more broken games, the glitchier games. And I know that, like, Bethesda games, they're broken. But it's not because the developers don't care. No programmer sits there saying, I'm going to purposely leave this bug in because I hate the consumers. No, not a single one of them says that. And I don't think that I think it's kind of crap that consumers are taking that attitude toward developers. And it's one of those things that's been happening and, like, people are saying, well, you know, sometimes a certain amount of personal abuse is warranted to developers. And that's why, you know, people who play broken games decide that death threats are the way to go with developers. Because how else are they going to hear them? Well, they'd hear constructive criticism. I kind of hope that changes a little bit. You don't see that as much on the higher, on the quote-unquote better games. But you see it a lot with certain games, especially like in the Awful Games Done Quick block, where, you know, the developers, they're just trying to do a job and they want to do their job well, and just they don't have the resources to do it well, and I don't think that's their fault. So I'm looking through chat live.vognetwork.com. See what people are sometimes saying about this. Dark Tatia says, my comparison about it being kind of like the Superb Owl he likes that. Yeah, that's a very good comparison. Fifth Dream says it's like watching an Olympian stretch and drink protein powder. Like, this is what he's saying, like watching streamers on Twitch speedrun the other 50 weeks out of the year. I'll just wait till the Olympics, thanks. Which, by the way, did you know there's an Olympics coming up in like 2 weeks? I don't know if you knew that. There was a little talk about here. Tireclaw says some speedrunners don't even bother learning about the lore of the game they're playing. They're only playing it because it's a good game to speedrun, so they don't care what the game is about. And SJ1er Matt even points out many of the runners use certain languages because the text box in the language is quicker. That's why you see a lot of Japanese games in speedruns, because an entire word can be one character in kanji. So, you know, what would be four text boxes in English might be one or two in Japanese. So that's, two less button presses to close that text box. And you got to go fast. Dungeon Bus says, I do like the runners that give props to the developers and also mention how different it is when they play casually versus using strats. And ActDef does point out something I was even going to bring up. You're trying to be funny and all, but we have to remember something like the story behind E.T., which I'll say E.T. on the Atari 2600, everybody's like, oh, worst game ever, and they never should have made it. But the guy who wrote it actually also developed, and everything the best game on the Atari 2600 in my mind. It's Howard Scott Warshaw was the guy who created E.T. He also created Yar's Revenge, which for a lot of people was the best game to come out in the era for the Atari 2600. So he made both the best and the worst game, but he only had 6 weeks to do it. They chose the fast and cheap option, and it wasn't good. So and I don't blame Howard Scott Warshaw for that. The only thing that Howard Scott Warshaw did with E.T. for Atari 2600 was say, "Yes, I can do this." Nothing else was his fault, and he even admits he probably shouldn't have spoken up, said, "Yes, I can do this." He thought he could, he couldn't, but he still did the best that he could with the tools and the resources he was given. Kaijuda says, "I want to see someone speedrun a VR game. That would be funny." And I think the organizers, they're waiting a little bit longer because it's come up, because I know like Super Hot VR would be a game to speedrun. There are speedrunners of Super Hot VR. I considered maybe trying to see if I could speedrun like Job Simulator or something. But I think it's all about setup and teardown. And that's the problem right now. I think maybe as we get closer, more VR headsets that don't have like specific tracking things, like especially like more inside out tracking, which is what the Windows Mixed Reality does, something that doesn't require as much setup, they may be more game to it. But like for a Vive, you have to set up the sensors and then, you know, set up the room around it. And then you got to worry about if it's going to work or not, because playing games that require sensors and stuff on a stage introduces new challenges that don't show up in your living room. So, you know, even PlayStation VR has problems when you're on stage with stage lighting. That's why at conventions and stuff, when they show it at E3, it's always in a darkened room, like a blacklight room, to eliminate ambient light. But when you're on stage, they have a full lighting rig because there's a full camera set up and everything up there. So it's a little bit harder to pull VR off quickly for setup and teardown. So that's, I think, the main reason Games Done Quick has stayed away from VR, is because of the setup required. Kaijudo said, "Real talk, I got E.T. back in 1988 for a buck, and I love that game. I never got why they said it was bad." And honestly, here's the tip. For E.T., game 3 and have both difficulty levers too low, and other than the fact you keep falling into the pits, it's actually playable. Like, that's the trick. You have to go play game 3, though, not game 1. So you switch it to game 3, the low difficulty on A and B, and it's actually kind of playable. I can actually beat E.T. I mean, basically, E.T., once E.T. goes away, you get points, and then it starts over again. So then you just rack up the points that way. So just getting him to his ship once isn't enough. You actually have to do it multiple times. Over the holidays, I got a board game or card game. I don't know, like, so what's the term for this? Because, like, it's not a board game, but it's not like a card game with, like, poker and stuff, and it's not... I guess that this would be a collectible card game because they do have DLC. I'm going to talk about Drop Mix. And Drop Mix is the board game by it's Harmonix designed it, and I believe Hasbro is the actual like board game publisher of it. And essentially, Drop Mix is like what if the people who made Rock Band made a board game or card game? So I will get this out of the way. The gimmick of it is that it hooks up to a free app on your phone, and the board hooks up via Bluetooth, and the cards have little RFID chips, kind of like, you know, the Amiibo cards and stuff like that, that the board reads, and then the phone does something. It is an interesting game, and the music part of it is totally ancillary to everything. Like, you could take the music part out of the game, and it would be the same game. So it is kind of a gimmick. It's a neat gimmick, but you can get rid of the music portion and have the same game. So what drop mix does is you have five little slots that you can lay cards down. When you lay a card down on that slot, it plays the part of the song on that card. So I may have like a microphone card, a lyric card of let's Call Me Maybe, that pop song. And I put that down, and then lyrics from Call Me Maybe start playing out of my phone. But then I could take the drums from I'm trying to remember some of the like or I could take like the guitar from a Cake song, Short Skirt Long Jacket. And I put that down, put that card down, and then suddenly you'll have the lyrics from Call Me Maybe over the guitar part from a Cake song. Or there's like a Childish Gambino card and stuff. But then, like, I could play, like, a wild card that has all of them, and that would be, like, Disturbed, Down With The Sickness is one of them. You put that down, everything kind of, like, remixes out, and then you get, like, the vocal cue that everybody knows from Down With The Sickness, and then it actually changes the tempo and the speed, and then brings in whatever instruments that you're playing from that. So that's the technology, and there's, like, a freestyle mode, and you can lay cards on top of each other and stuff like that. So that's the technology. And then what they've got two game modes. They've got a party mode, which basically the phone will say this is what the crowd wants. They want a red card. So somebody in the party of up to four people plays a red card, which is like a guitar or horn or something card. They make sense. And then you get points however fast you do that. And if you play the wrong thing, you lose points. And then after a couple rounds, you get scored on it. And then there's another mode that's two versus two or one versus one, a versus mode, where you're trying to get 21 points. And you get that by playing a card. You get a point. But if you play a card on an instrument with an instrument that's not currently being played, then you get an extra point, or you get a point for if your team has all five things facing you. I'm doing a terrible job at explaining this. But it is kind of interesting and fun to play. They have four. It comes with 60 cards, 15 cards for each playlist, and you basically play with that playlist. So they've got pop, rock, hip-hop, and electronica. And each playlist has, like, the one wild card. And then it's got, 12 instrument cards, like, where it is, like, it could be, you know, one or two instruments, and they're specific, like, yellow is for your vocals. Green is for, like, violins or some ancillary stuff. Blue is your drum percussion tracks. And red is, like, guitars or horns in the sense of Cake stuff, Cake music, because they have horns in their stuff. And then two cards that actually do, like, power-ups and stuff during the versus mode. And you're basically trying to play them on top of each other. Where this game gets you is... And Kaijudo even brings this up. My only fear with this is that they're going to come out with so many packs in such a small time window. There's the downside of this card games. They've already done that. Okay? Here's what they've done. So they actually have all these licensed songs. I've named a couple of them. And these are I'm actually using like all songs that are part of Drop Mix. But like for Short Skirt, Long Jacket by Cake, you only have in the game that come that you get right now, the base game, you only have the guitar and the horn cards. There exist drum cards, the vocal cards, and all that stuff. Those exist, but they're in add-on packs that came out at the same time. So you actually have to buy, I think, an extra like $40 worth of add-on cards just to get all the instruments to the songs that are already in the game. They don't add new songs. Okay? They just fill out the rest of the library of instruments. So, like, you can't play the vocals part of Short Skirt, Long Jacket right now unless you buy one of those add-on packs that has that card in it. Now, luckily, they're not blind packs. They tell you this is the rock add-on pack. So you know you're getting the rock add-on cards, and they're an exact set of cards that are in that pack. It's not a blind pack. It's not randomized. So when the game came out, it's not that anymore, and I don't think the person who bought it for me paid this much for it, but it was $100, the base game. It's down to 50 now on Amazon. But then I think it's like an additional $30 or $40 to get the rest of the cards, because there are both individual packs and then there's a super pack or something. So if you want to get all the cards, it's an additional like $40 on top of it. SJ Owner Matt says, I got a few of the add-on packs as well. To preface, the packs are $15 a piece. And those probably have, I guess, what, 15 cards? Yeah, it's... You don't need them. You can, like I said, the music part is kind of ancillary to, you know, the actual gameplay. And the gameplay is not going to change with those new cards. It just changes what it sounds like. Kaijuda says, yeah, we'll pass on this game. I might get the base set because it's... looks like such a cool different game. It is, and the technology is neat in it, and you can actually do some neat freestyle stuff, and you can actually save that freestyle to your phone so you can listen to it later. And it is kind of neat to have like all these on top of each other, and you can even like do things like manually change the beats per minute and the pitch, so you can make it slower or faster or chipmunk or, you know, really bassy and stuff. So you can actually do like stuff with that, and you can even like individually control the volume of certain tracks, so you can turn down the vocals and have the drums really, really loud. So you can do some neat stuff with it. But it was a fun game. I don't think it's a game I'll play that often, but it was fun. We played it on New Year's Eve as well. And it was enjoyable, but it's not one of those that would have too much staying power, because once you've heard all the tracks, you've heard all the tracks. And the new cards don't have any new songs. They just have more parts to the existing songs. Breakman says, what's the name of this game? One Percenters Only. No Norms Allowed. Actually, well, it's called Drop Mix. I know that's not exactly why you asked that question. But board games are expensive. Like, especially board games that are, you know, have a lot of pieces, like the European-style board games that are very popular nowadays. With a lot of board game geeks, those are also very expensive. You'll spend, like, I think, like Arkham Horror and stuff like that, they're $60 or $70 for a board game. So it's $50 for Drop Mix, which is what it is now, I believe, is not too unheard of in the board game scene. Going to make you all drink right now, because we're going to talk about something that happened at CES. Because, yes, CES was this week. I mean, this is a big weekend because, you know, MAGFest was last weekend. CES was this week. PAX South is just ending now. So there's a lot of ways to, you know, use up your vacation right after New Year's. But CES was this week, and there was a lot of stuff being announced there. The one I'm going to concentrate, though, is on VR. So, yes, oh, crap, VR talk, according to Pod Culture. So Gizmodo reports that it's CES where Vive is taking the next step forward in VR with the new Vive Pro head-mounted display and Vive wireless adapter. The biggest improvement on the new Vive Pro is the AMOLED display, sporting a combined resolution of 2880 by 1600, which is 78% denser than what you get on the current Vive. This should result as a less obstructive screen door effect that is caused by lowered resolution screens. Additionally, the Vive Pro will now feature built-in headphones with their own dedicated amp, dual mics, and a redesigned head strap for more comfortable marathon VR sessions. Vive is even adding a second front-facing camera to the Pro so that developers can integrate AR features into the headset's range of functions. This is basically because Microsoft's mixed reality range of things, which basically right now just have VR, they all have cameras on the front, stereo cameras on the front. Which is because Microsoft expects virtual reality and augmented reality to be one and the same. So they use those cameras on the front to bring AR. And also Microsoft uses inside-out tracking. So you don't need sensors on your desk or on your walls, like which is what Oculus and Vive need, respectively. It actually uses those cameras to track in 3D space what's in front of you. And those cameras, by the way, probably owe a little bit of stuff to Kinect technology, by the way. Remember, Kinect, it's dead? No. It lives on in Windows Mixed Reality. But the Vive Pro is adding those same cameras, so people who make things for Mixed Reality can easier bring them over to Steam VR. But what they're talking about and what I'm actually more excited about, which I believe will still work with the Vive I have if I don't get the Vive Pro, is the Vive wireless adapter, something that was initially teased as a prototype made by TP-Cast at CES 2017. The little wishbone-shaped box has the power to completely transform the modern VR experience. No longer will you have to worry about tripping over cords or yanking the guts out of your PC if you walk too far away. You can freely immerse yourself in another world without needing to settle the reduced fidelity and graphics from a mobile-based VR headset like a Samsung Gear VR or Google Daydream. There's no official information yet on how much the Vive Pro will cost or when it will be available. However, Vive said that the wireless adapter will be available sometime in the third quarter. Then there was an update about after having actually tried the Vive Pro. This Gizmodo writer actually said he has some mixed reactions. While a 78% increase in resolution sounds like a lot, the difference between standard Vive and Vive Pro isn't as pronounced as you might think. That said, the screen door effect is less noticeable to the point where it's easier to ignore the issue as opposed to it being a distraction like it often is in the Vive's original headset. I personally don't see the screen door effect anymore. It's there if I'm like, I wonder, oh yeah, this does have a screen door effect, but I actually have to think about looking at it. But that's just me. I'm not normal. The new increased fidelity also makes the redesigned head strap even more important because if your eyes are even slightly out of the headset sweet spot, you're right back to seeing blurry, low-res images. But when everything lines up just right, it's even easier to get sucked into other worlds. This was never more apparent when he got a chance to try out a racing simulation that had him hurling around Laguna Seca Raceway. This is something I've done a million times in other games like Gran Turismo, but in VR and with the Vive Pro's optics, better able to convey a real sense of speed, my brain started to battle against my instincts as I became more focused on avoiding crashing into walls instead of nailing corners and exit vectors like I should have been. The addition of the Vive wireless adapter, on the other hand, cannot be understated. As someone who is largely immune from motion sickness and other VR-induced nausea, which is also what I am, the wireless adapter combined the PC power graphics and very little lag created the closest thing to real freedom I've ever experienced in VR. When he played Doom VFR wire-free, after taking a minute to appreciate my new untethered boundaries, I was soon spinning around like a top, blasting demons and other hellspawn with the sort of breakneck speed that up until now I think VR was really lacking. With nothing tugging on your head and no wires trying to trip you up, the sense of getting transported somewhere else is even more distinct. It feels like the difference between riding a bike or riding a motorcycle. After this person does not think he'll be satisfied with tethered VR ever again. And the wireless adapter, this was also from the comments, it's powered by a small battery pack that's a little bit larger than a deck of cards and it can be stashed in a pocket during use. So, I actually, when I work with Futurist, which used to be ATL VR, they actually have untethered VR now. What they do is they have a lightweight PC that has a lot of beefy components in it in a backpack, and you're wearing the backpack, so you are completely untethered, and all the wires are going to this PC or laptop that you're wearing on your back. So that's what they're doing, but this seems like it's an even lighter option. So that would be kind of nice to be able to do. But untethered VR, that's going to be kind of the next thing. If they can get that lag down, untethered VR is where it's going to be. Kaijudo says, when you tap into the Matrix, you'll learn that there is no screen door. It is only your mind that has a screen. Bobby knows this now. I do know this now. Brickman asks, screen door effect. I'm guessing it makes the image not clear. Okay, so screen door effect, for the people who have never used VR, basically what the screen door effect, why it happens, it's probably easier to explain why it happens. The why it happens is because the screen is so close to your eyes, you can see pretty much each individual pixel. Maybe. Also because in lower density screens, the pixels are farther apart. And remember, they're magnified and they're like 2 inches away from your face. So your mom telling you when you were a kid, don't sit too close to the TV or you're going to go blind. Now you actually put the TV 2 inches away from your face. The screen door effect is basically why it's called the screen door effect is because it feels like you're looking outside through a screen door, you know, like the mesh screen. So you kind of see that's kind of what it looks like. You can tune it out. I tune it out all the time. But it is jarring for people who've never used VR. They put it on. They're like, why can I get rid of the screen door? It's not a clear picture like if you were just looking at a TV where you don't see every individual pixel. So I am looking forward to the wireless adapter, maybe not the Vive Pro as much. But I'll probably get the Vive Pro eventually anyway. And I know people have been getting the Windows mixed reality headsets because I know HP and Acer both have models out, and they are They are a little bit lower quality, which is good because it allows more people to try them. You don't need as beefy of a computer to run them. They do scale down for cheaper computers. You can even run them off of Surface laptops now. They do have the inside-out tracking. So for Windows Mixed Reality, you don't actually need to set up any sensors around your room. But the downside to that is you have to be looking at your controllers to do anything with them, which is not something that is required for the Rift or the Vive. And there are some games that, you know, where sometimes you are going to be doing something where you're not looking at your hands, but you need to do something with them anyway. And you can't do that with Windows Mixed Reality. The good thing is Steam VR does support Windows Mixed Reality. So if you get one of those mixed reality headsets, you can play anything on Steam. It's a little difficult to play Fallout 4 VR with a mixed reality headset, but that's probably something that can be worked on. SJR Matt says, will you be able to put googly eyes on it, though? Yes, not the ones I have been, because the ones I have been are too big, but there is room for googly eyes. It just won't be over the two cameras on the side. Breakman says, it sounds like coming to a baseball game and sitting behind the netting. Yes. That is also an apt way of saying what the screen door effect looks like. So we're going to take a quick music break, and then we will take your calls about anything. I know there's a lot of stuff I haven't talked about tonight, but we're going to take your calls about anything going on in the gaming industry. If you've been playing something that I haven't talked about yet, let me know, and we can talk about it then. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
Hi, this is Raging Eater, and whenever I'm not making dumb jokes in chat, I'm listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com.
It's 2018, 599 episodes almost done here. If you want to leave a bumper for the next 599 episodes, all you got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com. Or you can leave a voicemail on the toll-free number. I'm going to open all that stuff up right now. We actually have time to take calls, so hopefully you want to call in and talk. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. You can call in and talk about anything going on in the gaming industry. If you attended PAX South, love to hear from you how that was. Or if you went to CES. I've actually never been to a CES. That's probably, maybe a bucket list thing. Someday I'll go to CES. Actually, also because I've been, really researching home theater stuff. I was kind of watching CES a little bit more on some projectors and stuff, and seeing what I should be getting and doing stuff with the home theater, because that. I didn't really talk about it that much last week, but I actually have had I've already got the deposit down. I actually have a home theater company coming in. I've got a builder coming in. Like, we're going all out with, like, you know, enclosing a room, repainting, you know, really nice theater seats, Dolby Atmos, 4K, 120-inch screen, party at my place, basically. But it does mean I am going to actually be jumping on the Xbox One X and the PS4 Pro bandwagon in the next couple months. So finally, I'll get to have 4K gaming. But I've been watching kind of like what the projector options are for 4K and latency and stuff. And there's some stuff going on at CES that's like, maybe the projector I was getting might not be the one I get. Breakman says Bobby is going all HDTV on his house. I'll film some of it. We do have a YouTube channel. Because we haven't started the process yet. We've just gotten stuff going, people coming in and taking measurements. So we do have a call here on the line, so we're going to wait for Skype to connect us so we can talk. Bobby Black will show you are on the air. Who is this?
Hi, Bobby. This is Raginator.
Raginator, what's up, man?
No, a whole lot. Well, since you were talking about CES and home theater just before I made the call, mm-hmm. I did hear a very brief blurb within the past day or two that might interest you. Unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot of information regarding it. Mm-hmm. But supposedly, at CES this year, they had shown off 8K displays.
Right.
I have nothing was mentioned during the blurb about cost or anything like that. And obviously, right now, there's no real content for 8K display.
Right.
They're just starting to roll out 4K content. But something you may might want to possibly consider is potentially, to a certain degree, depending on how you look at it, kind of sort of future-proof any investment that you have, and just skip over 4K and just go to 8K.
Now, so what I'm doing and what I would suggest people to do is I'm actually – most of my investment is in the room itself. So I'm actually the projector I'm buying is one that I will probably be replacing in 2 or 3 years. So it's the projector I'm looking at getting is an actual 4K projector, but it's not a true 4K. So it's one of those pixel shifted 4Ks. It's the Optima. I was looking at the Optima UHD 60. If anybody wants to look it up, and it does 4K. It's got HDR 10. And stuff, and I'm going to have a room long enough because the UHD 60's throw distance is pretty long, but I'll be able to put it back far enough. But I'm more worried about like the room. I'm going to get the nice Dolby Atmos speakers, the screen, the seats, the riser, and all that stuff. But the projector is the easiest thing to swap out.
Now, just to refresh my memory, the Atmos is like the next step off from 7.1 surround sound, where they got like speakers in this, above you and below you, not just surrounding you.
Right. Yeah, and that's also what you'll see in movie theaters nowadays. And so what the sound engineers of movies and some games now have Dolby Atmos as well, is instead of saying this is in the front right channel or the middle right channel, they'll say this is where this object is in the room. And then when the installers come in to put in the speakers, they actually program into the receiver where those speakers are physically, like how far away they are, how high they are and stuff. And the receiver on the fly determines what speakers actually play that sound. So like my room, my Dolby Atmos setup and the receiver will be programmed differently than one in a movie theater.
Now, the question I have for you, regarding the Atmos is, situations like the one you're in yourself, where you own your own home, you don't have to really worry about neighbors above you or directly next to you, that should be a problem. But if you're living in like an apartment building, let's just say for the sake of conversation, the apartment building has particularly thin walls, is it safe to say that Atmos, even though the technology is probably really nice, it's probably not a good thing to have in your apartment if you have to deal with neighbors and possibly disturbing
right.
them.
So here's where I would go with that. They do make like a sound bar for Atmos that will basically bounce things off your ceiling to get the same effect. But they also make Dolby Atmos headphones.
Oh, really?
It actually decodes it and says, okay, you're in headphones. So it still puts everything where they should be, but now it's coming through your headphones.
Cool. Yeah, I would. Personally, I would love an actual full-on surround sound system, but I hate to disturb my neighbors and give them a reason to complain to my landlord, and then have them breathe down my neck. So.
Right. Yeah, so the headphones would be the way to go to get Atmos.
Oh, all right. All right, well, thanks for taking my call. It's definitely appreciated. I'll probably clear the line that way act after someone else can call on. All right, have a nice day.
Okay, thank you so much. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free North America if you wanted to call in. So I'm looking at probably the Optima UHD 60, which is a faux 4K, but you really can't tell. But they announced the UHD 50, which is a little bit cheaper, but I'm going to have to see if its video lag is a little bit better. So we do have another call. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, this is ActDeft.
ActDeft, what's up, man?
Well, a really good week for event gaming, so...
Yes.
So yeah, I want to talk about a little more about Games Done Quick.
Okay.
Especially because we didn't think about this type of events like maybe even 15 years ago, where lots of gamers were doing their thing, and especially for something really great like cancer, well, donating against cancer.
Right.
So.
Good charities, so, yeah. Yeah, they've done like Doctors Without Borders and other charities as well.
But yeah, and not only like this type of event, but also like competitive events like Evo.
Mm-hmm.
And right now the Overwatch League, it's getting really big. It's mm-hmm. like a really good moment for those who like those type of events.
Yeah.
And it's like really amazing because I didn't expect like maybe even 15 years ago to see something like this for gaming to be something that maybe most people like would like to even watch, even if they aren't interesting, like you were saying,
so
you don't like speedruns in general, but you watch games done quick.
So it's interesting because I've been doing this for a long time, and I remember 15 years ago, 20 years ago. If you guys remember, I used to be on All Games Radio, and that was an All Games Network started by a man by the name of Scott Rubin, who helped found the G4 Network. And G4 had a show called Arena, which was esports. And the reason that they did that and why Scott was big on that is because you looked in everywhere else in the world, and like you looked specifically in Korea, and they had esports. Like StarCraft was basically the national sport of South Korea. And he always said the thing that is separating, that is not allowing this to happen in America, is really the lack of commentators. And that's kind of what he was trying to get across with Arena. It didn't work on G4, but he always said the reason that people watch football is because the commentators are able to explain what's going on. Even if most people who know a lot about football hate most of the commentators, that's their purpose. And we didn't have that. And I think what it is the better quality in what everybody else calls shoutcasting, where you would actually now have announcers that are really good and really knowledgeable and can break things down, and that's kind of what is allowed more to bring hold. So 15 years ago, this absolutely was happening. What we're seeing now, it's just only happening in Korea and maybe China, and we were trying to figure out how to get that to work in America. So I'm glad it's finally here because it was happening just elsewhere. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase growth. So, unfortunately, the reason that cut off there for people on the podcast feed is we lost connection. I lost internet for about 6 minutes, which means we were, you know, ActDev, we would have probably gone on for another minute or two. Then I would have called OLR, and we would have it would have been great. Unfortunately, we lost 6 minutes of show. And I'm going to just go ahead and jump over, and we're going to try to, you know, tease what's going on at OLR, and then I'm going to get off the air. So my internet's going to be perfectly fine for like the next 2 days, and it's not going to do this thing anymore. So we're going to try to call OLR real quick and figure out what's going on. Orange Lounge Radio is coming up next. It's people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much longer than I do. They've got a very special, special episode tonight, so I did want to tease it anyway, even though I know we are running out of time. Sacramento, you guys there?
We're here, Bobby. How are you?
I would have been better if RNG stayed on my side and I wouldn't have lost internet.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that internet trouble. You know, I seem to recall we were in one of the apartments or one of the studios we were at before. We used to lose internet a lot, and it's so frustrating when this is like, you know, the backbone of what we do.
Yeah.
You know, sorry. Every time you say that's a special episode of something, I think of like Different Strokes.
Oh, yeah, like a, yes. Like 80s. Very yeah. Special. Well, it is kind of like that tonight.
Well, so. Comcast used outage, and it was very effective.
Yes. And Kai Judo says maybe you need to record the podcast on another day. It doesn't matter. It happens at random times. And, like, I work from home. And it'll always happen, like, when I'm in the middle of a video conference with a client. And I'll just lose it for 5 minutes.
Time to get on the phone and yell at people.
I have been. Well, and here's what sucks is I've done that. And I even have, like, the personal cell – or not the personal cell phone, but the cell phone of the Comcast technician that was out here. And he's even told me, this is exactly what's going on and this is what we're doing. Unfortunately, it was an independent company, an independent contractor that has to come out and fix the fiber outside my neighborhood. But since it's an independent company, they don't have a timeline on when that would happen.
Wow.
I bet they'd get a timeline if you mentioned the three magic words.
I know.
Better Business Bureau.
That's right. But then they turn around and say, well, you only have 5 minutes of downtime a day.
But they don't understand.
Yeah,
it's so
Oh. Still, the three magic words, you'd be surprised what kind of fires that lights.
I know. Yeah. So I've been better, but how are you guys doing? What do you guys got going on tonight?
I'm doing good. We're a lot of buzz in studio tonight. We have a lot of guests here in studio tonight. I'm going to be introducing shortly when we go live. But as I was teasing for the past couple weeks here on OLR, we're going to have some lady gamers here in studio joining us tonight. And specifically around one game that I've brought up several times on the show before, Ingress, which is a mobile game, which most people probably know realistically because it kind of is the same company that did Pokemon Go, which was obviously crazy everywhere with gamers, you know, last year, especially when it first launched. We're in 2018 now. In 2016 when it first launched. We'll be talking to them about Ingress and just some of the crazy adventures and some of the things people do to make triangles.
There you go. Well, you guys are coming up next. I'm going to go ahead and get off the line so you guys can get started. But thanks so much.
Yeah, take care, Bobby. Thanks as always.
So that is it for me. Hopefully next week when I'm back for episode 600, the internet will stay up, but it probably won't. It'll probably decide that is the time it's going to go down. Then it'll be fine for like 36 straight hours after that and before it. But that's it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for using the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf or Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf is where you can reach me, or you can submit feedback on the episode page here at VogNetwork.com. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the wonderful chatters. So thank you very much. Con Daddy, Dark Sakura, Dark Tetsuya, DC Nate, Hecht, Rob Roberts, VHJ6V, Burr, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, JD, Tiger Claw, Acteft, Alt, Bacon Bits, Bull, Crimson, Dungeon Buster, Izette, Fantaz, Fluke, Breakman, Happy Early 600 Man is what he changed his name to, Kaijudo, Kazin, Matt Q, Matt Fox, MXC, Podculture, Risimo, Shadow Next Gen, Sean 8BitX, Spiffy, SJ100 Matt, and Rageinator. So that is it for me. I will see you guys next week, and hopefully with stable internet. One can hope. It's only been going on for like 4 months now. See ya. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.